Our land, our future, we are generation restoration is the key tag for this year's World Environment Day, focusing on land restoration, desertification, drought resistance. Why focus on these areas on the biggest day of the UN environmental calendar?
So nature is at a tipping point, and some 40% of land is already degraded, and every 5 seconds, the equivalent of one football pitch of soil is eroded. And more than 3/4 of the global population is expected to be affected by droughts by 2050. And these numbers should really concern everyone, as the impacts on food supply, water, and livelihoods are devastating. The World Environment Day is an opportunity to show the global community that these tipping points can be avoided through restoration and through the action of government, civil society, youth, businesses, and individuals everywhere. And we can be hopeful thanks to recent progress on restoration and because of international commitments like the Kunming-Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework. And this landmark plan for people and nature includes a target that by 2030, at least 30% of degraded terrestrial, inland water, and marine coastal ecosystems are under effective restoration.
And can you explain how these issues relate to the triple planetary crisis of climate change, nature and biodiversity loss, pollution and waste?
Yes, we really see the connections among these crises through this year's World Environment Day theme. The fresh water that nourishes land suffers from pollution, and air pollution impacts pollinators, which are essential to producing food. And forests, grasslands, and drylands are major stores of carbon. And when these ecosystems are damaged and degraded, carbon can be released into the atmosphere, fueling climate change. And climate change worsens desertification and land degradation through increased frequency and severity of droughts, heat waves, and more. So the crisis facing our lands and soils shows just how intertwined these planetary challenges are. But it's also important to remember the other side of the coin. When we act positively for nature, we are also acting to improve climate stability and to beat pollution. And take urban trees, for example. They can cool air temperatures by up to 5 degrees Celsius. And they also bring benefits like cleaner water and air and a reduced need for air conditioning that saves energy and saves money. And in the Pacific, we see this relationship in the conservation and restoration of ecosystems that protect coastal communities from climate hazards.
And you mentioned about the communities and the effect on communities. Can you give some examples about the effects this is all having on peace and security?
Yes. 2 billion people depend on the agriculture sector for their livelihoods, particularly poor and rural populations. And some 1.4 billion livelihoods are directly reliant on access to fresh water, including jobs related to food and beverage, energy and water industries. So the impacts of degradation, desertification, and drought can have drastic effects for jobs, especially for those who may lack a social safety net. And when the water runs dry or when the harvest fails due to desertification or drought, the consequences can deeply burden people and communities. And land degradation and depletion of natural resources can also pose risks to peace and security. And in some cases, the conflicts we are seeing in the world are caused actually by the environmental matters, such as depleting land and water availability, which is further exacerbated by climate change.
What about health and cultural security?
Yes, ecosystem restoration also has clear and direct benefits for human health in the form of improved air, water, and soil quality, as well as disaster risk reduction and reduction of vector-borne diseases. And it's also widely recognized now that there are close connections between the emergence of zoonotic diseases like COVID-19 and ecosystem degradation, which clearly shows how critical healthy ecosystems are in maintaining human health. and there are also significant benefits of ecosystem restoration in bringing about cultural security. Healthy ecosystems provide non-material benefits to people in the form of spiritual enrichment, recreation, and social-cultural fulfillment. And for many parts of society, including for indigenous peoples and local communities, their culture and knowledge systems are deeply rooted with the natural environment. So restoration and sustainable management of ecosystems is key to protect culture, including indigenous and traditional knowledge.
Just on the COVID, do you think more people in decision-making positions will see COVID as an example of the vital importance of looking after our land?
I think it was really eye-opening incident for many of us also in the environmental field, really made us realize how important our healthy ecosystems are in terms of really its foundational role to maintain human health. And I think because of this, our experience going through COVID-19 and pandemics, I think now there is some increased awareness of how important it is to maintain and restore healthy ecosystems.
Now, it is a big ask to find these solutions, isn't it, really? I mean, the world is recovering from COVID and the world's wrecked by conflict, and there are people competing for funds for different things. So really, are there solutions? And can you give examples?
Yes. So it does not have to be one or the other, and nature is not going to wait. The world is facing triple planetary crisis, as I said, and those crises are closely interconnected and put the well-being of current and the future generation under significant risk. And the interconnected nature of these issues means that they must be addressed together to maximize synergies and minimize trade-offs. And so in order to reverse the current trend of environmental decline, we need a coordinated action by all actors of society, including governments, businesses, and civil society, and urgently transform key systems, including energy, water, and food, so that our use of land and oceans becomes sustainable. And in terms of success stories, I'd like to give an example of a growing interest we have seen in the Pacific region in the last decade towards sustainable blue economy. And in the region, a number of regional entities are increasingly engaged with related initiatives. And the key focus of sustainable blue economy approach is to ensure an integrated approach across sectors and promote coordinated action by all stakeholders in society to transform economic sectors towards sustainability.
Now, what about relationships with the land itself? Different cultures relate to their land. Are there different approaches to the solutions?
Yes, certainly. Relationships to the land and approaches to sustainable land management differ depending on local and cultural context. For example, indigenous peoples often are deeply connected with their lands and nature. Example is that in the culture of the Maori people of New Zealand, humans are deeply connected with nature, and the two are equal and interdependent. And the Maori's tradition and belief system are based on their deep respect to their land and the natural world. And this kind of intimate relationship the Maori people have with their lands and nature is shared by many other indigenous peoples around the world. And in the Pacific region, community conserved areas are very common, and there, the indigenous peoples and or local communities voluntarily conserve their land or sea area through customary or other means, and in which they also have a central role in managing their land. However, although indigenous peoples are often described as the custodians of precious natural resources, they are often denied their rights to lands, territories, and resources. So in this regard, ensuring the collective rights of indigenous peoples to lands, territories, and resources is important, not only for their well-being, but also for addressing some of the most pressing global challenges, including climate change and environmental degradation.
Now, what about the policymakers? What about the economists? You know, there's so much to do, so we have to encourage everybody to take action. So what is the sweetener to getting the economists and the financial sectors and the insurers and all the people that crunch the numbers? Is there a relationship between ecosystem restoration and improved economies, GDP, for instance, to encourage all sectors to see that it's to their advantage?
Yes, certainly. Restoring ecosystems makes economic sense. Every dollar invested in restoration can bring up to $30 in ecosystem services. Employment and other benefits of restoration are predicted to be 10 times higher than the cost of restoration interventions across different biomes. Restoration boosts livelihoods, lowers poverty, and builds resilience to extreme weather. And restoration increases carbon storage and shows climate change. And restoring just 15% of land and halting further conversion could avoid up to 60% of expected species extinction.
So what would your call to action and or your wish list be for our land and our future?
So first, I would recommend taking time to learn about how truly amazing soils and land are. And land is the world's most biodiverse habitat, as almost 60% of all species live in soil. And even though they face great water scarcity, dry lands still generate 44% of global crop. And over 28,000 species of plants are reported as being of medicinal use. And many of them are found in forest ecosystems. And with this knowledge, we would ask you to commit to action that helps our land and use your purchasing power to support local farmers and buy from brands that sustainably source material and aim to reduce your household food waste. And for any kitchen waste, try to use it for composting. Pressure elected officials to deliver policies that support ecosystem restoration and conservation. And lasting change to revive land and soils is possible, and we are all part of the solution.